insurance part, I will agree with you. That should not happen, you know, maybe as part of an agreement, but should happen prior to. But I still, I talked about that. And I don't recall anybody standing behind me and saying, Juan, you're right. As a matter of fact, I was asked to leave town and so forth. And I can't say on the record for sure, Ms. Roberts, but I don't think you even supported me in that particular time when you were on the board and I had talked about those particular issues. I want good staff morale. I want staff to be well prepared and well trained. And I think I also want them to be well compensated so they can teach the kids that now we have in our district, which are different than they were before, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, or 25 years ago. I'm going to support it. And when we're getting more staff of color in the ranks now all of a sudden we're going to stop everything where we're going to look at it more carefully. And what message does that send when I'm trying to get kids of color to, number one, pursue a career in education, and number two, apply to the school district when it's hard enough to get them to come here, much less have them to stay here.
Sorry? Well, I came into this bargaining process late, so there had been some decisions made before I ever started. And there are certain things I don't like about the agreement, the extension of TURP through 2008-2009 being one of those. But in any negotiation, there are going to be things you like and things you don't like. And so recognizing that and recognizing that I do think the process will get healthier is a positive step forward. I am going to support the agreement. John?
The group that you're going to put together and look at healthcare, does that reopen the contract up then? I just want to get this straight.
They have to report back by February 15th. And if they have something, we both agreed to, it reopens the contract. The contract in the agreement reopens by mutual agreement based on what they find out in this committee of six people.
So things could happen then, I mean, in terms
yes.
of...
I think that's the real intent in looking at it. I mean, the real intent in looking at it is to put some things together.
Yeah. I think Mr. Roberts is correct. I think Mr. Lopez is correct. I mean, I think we've got a situation that needs to be looked at. And again, I think, having the committee study the issue of health care, I think, is important. And I do believe, we should be trying to save positions and jobs because... Again, the people at the low end of the totem pole probably look like me and Mr. Lopez and Mr. Vang, although that's really not the case, according to Mr. Nadler, actually, in terms of some of the layoffs. But again, we can't get to the place that we're talking about with Mr. Lopez is saying if we're always going to be going backwards because of our contracts. So.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Are you predicting that if we save, say, $2-3 million, that it's likely that would end up going back into the budget to be used for programming?
I'm predicting it will go back into the budget to be used.
That MTI will agree rather than putting it on the wage scale?
No, that's not what I said. I think it will go on their wage scale. We settle the total package cost for that, for the whatever year that is.
That's what I said.
06-07, we settled the total package at 3.98. So any savings within that 3.98 goes back on the salary.
Well, that's essentially my concern about the midterm nature of the thing going into 07-09. We certainly are still going to have continuing health insurance increases, but we could also increase the basis for all the wages, which, it's a question of how you interpret that. I think that makes life harder for the new hires. I think that makes more extensive layoffs more likely, because I think we have the same problem going into the second year of the contract that we had this time, which is that we will not have the operating budget to cover it without a referendum. We don't have another 7.6 in new money that we can expect for that second year.
No, that's correct.
Certainly not after the joint finance.
After the joint finance, we'll be a lot
more than that. We did not have any expectation that we'd have 7.6 more to cover.
No, I think we've been clear throughout the whole process. The very nature of the revenue cap creates a situation in which there is basically a gap between what it costs you to continue and how much money you're able to spend. That's exacerbated, obviously, by what the joint finance did. But that would exist forever until the revenue cap law changes.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I actually think this is a very significant contract that we've succeeded in negotiating. I think, as Lori says, in negotiation you don't always get everything you want. I think we've got some substantial items here. I think that the package settlement is below our historic settlement rates, below the state average and below the average for the county. And I think the committee to look at health insurance is a major step. It is at least the beginning of the discussion of what the alternatives are and whether it is. I think that we have to look long term at the prospect of what this might mean for the future. And I really think that MTI was very sensitive in their bargaining to the fiscal position of the district. And I think that that's part of what I think is important to recognize here. And therefore, I'm very pleased with this. And I'm certainly going to support it.
Juan? Sure, I just want to mention one last thing also. And Ruth, with all due respect, and again, I just disagree with you. I'm not even going to criticize you. But on all the graduations and all the many things that I've gone to, you know, one of the biggest influence in our lives are teachers at any level, whether it's law school, whether it's college, whether it's elementary, middle, high school. Teachers have been an influence in my life, and I feel that they should be compensated. I strongly believe that every child or every young person that I shook their hand or every graduation that I went to over the last week, I know that a teacher made a difference or influenced or helped that young person excel academically. And I think they deserve compensation. Should we give them the store? Definitely not. I'm not advocating for that, but I think they should be well compensated. And if you look at the number that's now changed as far as a starting salary, you know, I was talking to a couple of staff that I have that are certified teachers, but they're not working for the district. And, you know, that kind of pay is important to try to attract minority applicants to this district. And I'm going to continue to hold that from my perspective. I wasn't criticizing. I'm just telling you my perspective.
Oh, yeah. I would like to say something.
Well, thank you. I'd like to make a comment. I don't think our disagreement about it's about whether we like teachers, evaluating teachers. I value teachers. I've been a teacher. I work in schools. I've never said I don't want them to have any criticism. I think, however, a large part of our responsibility is also to their working conditions. And it is going to be just as hard to attract people to schools in which you have ever smaller number of teachers. Compensation at 4% is not going to offset that. And we're already down from about 4 years ago, about 62 positions. We're going down farther now. We're in the layoff phase rather than the not replace phase. And I think we need to be putting a higher premium in our negotiations. This is a difference of emphasis on trying to maintain working conditions and reducing the numbers of staff.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion? Take a vote. All those in favor of ratifying the contract, say aye.
Carol Oliver.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
Can he say that?
Can Oliver vote on this?
Oliver is directly
related to
people
in the party. Yeah, I'll vote for you.
I mean,
okay.
It's conflict.
No, yes, yeah. That's why I asked for this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. And that passes 5-2.
Move to adjourn.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. All those in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. There's another meeting after this.
Favor of the amended minutes of April 18th and June 6th, 2005. 2005. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. All right. Public appearances. First one, Don Severson, Lawrence Winkler. Mr. Severson,
thank you.
Take your rightful place and know where to sit.
Thank you. Active Citizens for Education highly recommend and encourage the Finance and Operations Committee and the Board of Education to initiate the conduct of an independent review of the Business Services Division staffing and operations. We reiterate and reinforce our recommendation previously made to the Board last year, cited below, that such a review should be undertaken and that such elements as suggested should be considered as part of the review. Number one, identify and review the roles and responsibilities of the board, administration, including central office and building services, in budget preparation and decision-making processes, and establish board leadership in directing the overall guiding principles and policies for all phases of the budget and in relationship with priorities of curriculum and instruction. Two, what are the unfunded and underfunded state and federal mandates under which the district is operating? What is the level of funding for the underfunded mandates, and what are the programs and costs, i.e. administration, associated with each of the mandates? Three, involve functional and cost-benefit analysis expertise from private business, as well as educational administration. Included in the analysis should be one, federal and state reporting and administrative mandates. Two, board policies impacting upon operational functions. Three, delineations of functional requirements, functions needed for decision-making, and nice to have but not necessarily needed. And four, planning and budgeting processes. Four, what are the program services staff and budget allocations which have been transferred from the operations budget to Fund 80, and what are the board and administrative policies and accountabilities governing such transfers and functions? And five, identify existing collaborations and partnerships with other entities and stakeholders, as well as potential for such. We'd be very happy to assist, elaborate, work with, whatever in terms of how this process should be moved ahead, which we hope you will do.
Thank you. It's come to me.
If we're going to put a strategy to go ahead and actually undertake these things, how would you suggest we do that? Would the board be leading that? Would the administration? Would we be hiring a consultant to help us? How would we get it done?
I would suggest that the board should take the leadership with this and manage it. I would suggest that perhaps you would put together a task force, kind of a one-time type task force that would include members of the board, administration, and business and educational administration expertise, small group, 5-6 people, and lay out a strategy and determine the direction that you would go and who you would include in that process. And then then use that as a means of going out and soliciting a team of people who would do this. But I do believe that the board should be in direct control of this process.
When you said solicit the people that would be control of actually doing that, what do you mean by that?
Well, I believe there are sufficient experts in the community, both in business and in ed administration, like at the university or MATC or other places, that would volunteer. I don't think you would necessarily have to spend much, if any, money in order to accomplish this.
Any other questions? So, Mr. Severson?
Discussion.
About a year ago, Don, you, when we were talking about cost-benefit analysis for the school district, you said that you would provide for me and for the district an example of a school district that actually employed a cost-benefit analysis. And at least the last time I asked you, you had not at that point gotten us that reference. Is that something that you are still working on?
Still working on it, and I think as a part of this kind of a process, we'd submit it at that time.
You would submit
if this kind of a process is
but
initiated.
Not, you wouldn't submit it to us unless we had this in place?
Unless you initiate this process. Because it's outside, separate, and if you look at it as an independent, separate kind of an entity, it's not going to work. In my opinion, it has to be a part of the process. And the board has to be committed to that kind of process in order to work.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions for Mr. Stevenson? Okay. Thank you very much. Next is Lawrence Winkler, followed by David White.
Titled this, "With is not a four-letter word." The agenda of this particular committee, what stood out when I looked at it was items number 4 and items number 6. It sets communication to the public about proposed 2005-2006 budget and non-traditional communication strategies to speak to community stakeholders. Now, Mark Twain once remarked that the difference between the right word and almost the right word is the difference between lightning and the lightning bug. And for me, communication to and speaking to is vastly different than communication with and speaking with, like the differences between lightning and lightning bug. With, for me, has a strong flavor of teamwork, working together, listening, and dialogue. Well, it's been a legacy from my perspective of what the administration and the board does is they speak to people rather than dialogues with folks. So with, I don't think, is a four-letter word. It needs to be used again and again until it becomes part of the culture of both the administration and the board's culture. So I would wish you would consider that when it sets the agenda, that you look at more being more open, in the agenda remarks, just indicate that you will be speaking with and dialoguing with the public on these matters before the board. Thanks.
Any questions for Mr. Winkler? Thank you, Mr. Winkler.
David White, followed by Pat Smith.
Thank you for allowing me to speak before you tonight. For those that haven't met me, I'm the union rep for Local 6, Custodian Teaching School. Let me first off start off by thanking the board for trying. The two referenda that failed, I appreciated that the board stuck its neck out. I asked you to do that a year ago, and you took me up on it. I was disappointed, I think, as we all were, at the outcome. But I don't think that it represents the end of a process. And I'm coming here to you to tell you that I understand that you have your board cut out for you. But I also understand that the cuts that come down every year because of what's happening at the state level and at the local level with funding for this school district has been borne fairly heavily by the custodial bargaining, and I'm concerned about that. The buildings that we clean and maintain are a substantial financial investment of this school district. The custodians don't teach any kids. They maintain the buildings, though, in which the teachers do teach the kids. The condition of those buildings is an essential part of what happens in the educational process. And, we really cannot afford to let this investment in these buildings be diminished because we aren't maintaining them. We are looking at, as it stands now, another, I think, 1,500 to 2,500 square feet of cleaning per custodian. I think 2,500 is the number. In any case, somebody knows that number better than me. But the point is that at some point, we're going to reach a point where we're kidding ourselves if we're thinking we're doing the job. We're not going to be able to do the job. People are working as hard as they can. They were working as hard as they could last year when it went up to 2,750 square feet per person, or 27,500, whatever the number is. It's 30,000 square feet, I think, in this new thing. If you think about that, that's 30,000. Thank you, Roger. That's a phenomenal amount of cleaning that has to get done every day. And the way that we're ending up doing it is alternate cleaning and such like that, so that some of these places aren't getting done every day. Just hitting the high spots as much as we can, and frankly, just hoping that that if we get to it the next day, it'll be okay. Not be able to do that anymore. We need to reach a point where we understand that we attain a level of cleaning below which we cannot go. Anyway, I'm hoping that we can find that point. I'm hoping we have reached that point already. I'm deeply concerned about it, and I think that the taxpayers of this school district are concerned, would be concerned too, if they understood just how serious the threat is to the investment that they have in these buildings.
Okay. I agree with you. I do think, though, that, I mean, I think the public who comes in and out of the buildings has noticed the result of the cuts that we made last year, because one of the comments that I fielded in practically every group of staff or parents across the spring was the buildings are not as clean as they used to be. And this was before the cuts that we are anticipating. Now, my recollection is we cut 13 positions last year, and there are eight. Is it eight this year?
14 total last year.
14.
In custodial area.
And
plus
eight?
Three, plus two trades.
So it's 22 over 2 years.
Yeah.
And what did we start out with, Roger, about 300?
We were at 231.
231. So we're looking at roughly on the order of a 10% cut in 2 years of custodial staff, and it doesn't take, you know, much to anticipate where that's going real quick.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's not something that we as board members feels good for the community or for the school this year. I certainly appreciate the work that everybody does.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. At this, followed by Ed Bloom.
I think everybody knows me, especially the people sitting around me. I invited some brothers and sisters on, so you can actually see building custodians all the way down to custodial worker ones. A lot of them are half-timers that were forced out of a half-time position after years of being half-time. A few years ago, now they're forced into alternate locations. Because of the cuts, now they're going to be moved again. They don't know the politics of why the public either blame Art, blame the board. They don't know it. All they know is we have a few principals that think they can order, you know, custodians out to mow the field that I can't get to because there's no overtime. And I explained to that custodian that when you blow off that tractor that's not supposed to mow a big field, that you'll be pushing a lawnmower and tell your principal to call building services. And that got me thinking, I don't think people know what alternate cleaning means. I know your kids go to Sherman. That means the right-hand side of the hall, after these new cuts, are going to get cleaned Monday night, and then the left side of the hall will get cleaned on Tuesday night. And then they'll have to blank because of the restrooms, chalkboards, and waste baskets. We've had a few incidents where management, you know, took complaints from principals, and they were going to go out and, you know, find out why the schools are dirty. And we'll be a rocket scientist to figure that out. So I invited some of these building custodians who have to juggle how to clean classrooms. And now with these new cuts, they're not going to replace another ground school worker. Well, I'm on the ground school now. And
I know all the principals want their playgrounds plowed. Well, here's a scenario. They hire custodians to plow on overtime when there's big snowstorms. That stops when the parking lots are done. Playgrounds are going to be plowed by six people. I think there's 45 schools. So your playgrounds won't be plowed like they used to be, and there ain't no way to get to them. In the summertime, I mow on the east side. There's a guy mows on the west side. One guy does diamonds. One guy marks fields. Our lead worker now mows grass instead of doing projects we should be doing. So I've come here tonight with all these custodians to let you know that I don't think the public knows what a dirty school is going to look like, but after these new cuts, you take a school like Alice School, where this building custodian that loves that school is now transferred to Elvium because he's going to lose his day person because the night person is not going to be alternate anymore. So you'll have one person in the building from 7 to 10 o'clock. Well, if you've ever had any programs in any schools, who's going to tear all those chairs down? Sure can't be the building custodian during the daytime because he's going to be by himself. And I've been at a school like Lowell School. We used to have two people there in the day that did a lot of shoveling. So the walks won't be as clean as they should be. That one guy can't do it all. And so I'm here to just, you know, I already mentioned to Doug Pearson and Art that I was coming down. And my custodians will not take the brunt of this. They will not be rolled up. These people behind me, there's a couple that have as much time as I'm going to start my 31st year. When I started in 1975, we used to clean the lights. We used to clean the light bulb. We used to wipe them off, put them back in. And we used to clean from the ceiling down. That's not happening now. So it's not their fault why the public decided not to pass the operations. A lot of them didn't know much about the Leopold, you know, the school, why, but like I said, the politics. But I mentioned to Art and Roger in our labor management meeting that these principals and teachers got to realize that when they have parties in a classroom, they do that a lot. I was a custodian for 10 years. I was invited into a lot of them. That floor is not going to get mopped anymore. It's just not going to happen. Custodians will leave a light on in the classroom. They'll clean the whole school. They'll go back and mop the floor, but that's not going to happen. There's not enough people. John Arnoldson's a building custodian at Tokie. Roger was out there, saw a lot of this gang graffiti and that stuff. They spent a lot of money on overtime over the weekend to clean that up for the school. And by Monday, it was trashed again. Well, now he's losing his alternate cleaning. So if you've ever been in Tokie Middle School, they have four people cleaning that school now. And two during the day don't have the brunt of it. It's going to be the two guys at night. So it'll be one in elementary, one in middle. You know, do that. So that's why I come here tonight. I didn't come here to beat anybody up. I just came here to tell you the facts of life. And the people behind me aren't going to take the brunt of any kind of discipline or nothing else because they didn't create this problem. Thanks. I'm sure there's no questions because I just set it up. Nice to see you again, Juan. Haven't seen you for a while.
I was wondering where you were. You haven't cut our lawn out there in Allied lately.
I can come cut your lawn for you if I want. I don't do Allied. I do it in the winter.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I know you are. All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, people.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
All right. We now go.
Thank you, everybody.
Our last speaker is Mr. Bloom. Ed Bloom.
I defer to Jim and speak after Jim, if you don't mind.
Okay. If you don't mind, let's see the crowd is fine. I'm just going to change the things around, but I would,
if you don't mind.
Yeah. I'm going to move six to nine. If you don't mind.
Well, I'll speak now if you want me to.
You want to speak now? Okay.
I'll be quick.
You're next.
Okay, all right. I actually came to address the communications issue, and in putting communications and credibility into my favorite search engine, I amazingly came up pretty quickly with communication tips prepared by what seemed to be a CISA in New York, Board of Cooperative Educational Services, and it's about developing credibility, and I'll just highlight some of the comments made here. The most important element of effective public information program is credibility. You cannot lie or accept steward the truth because you may lose credibility. And here are some tips. Don't concentrate your communications on only the good news. School districts have problems. Talk about those problems and what the district is doing to resolve them. The second bullet point says if you're going to use any opinion in a newsletter, story, or a public presentation, make sure you back it up with the facts. The third bullet point says don't be afraid of controversy. If the community is talking about it, you should be writing and talking about it too. Many times, bringing issues right out on the table diffuses the controversy. Here again, you should lean more heavily towards facts than opinion. The next bullet point, become sensitive to what people out in the schools and community are saying and what they're grumbling about. This will help you avoid writing or saying something that will be easily dismissed as lies. Be timely, next bullet point says. People in the community should learn about new developments as they are occurring. They should learn about problems as soon as the school district identifies them. And they should hear the news first from the district, not from other sources, such as over the back fence or a cocktail party or from this school. That was my editorial addition. On the last bullet point, most importantly, have faith in the public, both internal and external. Don't be afraid to discuss any topic or share any kind of information with them. Being open will sometimes get you in trouble, at least temporarily. In other words, the district will get criticized by some people once certain things are shared with them. But we have plenty of evidence to show that in the end, openness is the only way to develop trust. These very same people who criticize you will also come to respect you. These, particularly as they dialogue with you over the information you have shared, and in the end, they will often support you, or at the very least, they will lose the desire to stand in your way. So that's my little spiel, thanks to Deborah Bush Supermata, however she pronounced it, from Albany, New York.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Bush? Thank you very much, Mr. Boone.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take out of order here, but we have with us a special guest, Jim Zelmer. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit about the program that he has developed, the software, and he's got some other ideas. And just would like Mr. Zelmer to talk about this thing here.
Great.
Take it away, please.
Thanks, Johnny. First of all, I want to say thank each and every one of you for the time that you spend for Madison's kids. It's truly a thankless job. I think to set the table, it's important to understand what's happening with traditional media, and I have a few things that I'll mention here, and I'll email you around some links after the meeting. The first thing is daily newspaper circulation has been dropping since 1987. Pew Internet, part of the Pew Charitable Trust, ran a survey in March, and they asked, they found out what the percentage of adults who read the daily newspaper yesterday was. If you were 65 and over, it was 60%. If you were 50 to 64, 52%. 30 to 49, 39%. And 18 to 29, 23%. So the places we've gone in the past from influence and conversation don't get it done anymore. Network TV's audience share has fallen by a third since 85. Radio listenership's at a 27-year low. Magazine circulation peaked in 2000 and is now back to 1984 levels. A couple months ago, you might have seen in the New York Times, they asked the PBS CEO, where do you get your information? Do you watch the Neil Lehrer, great show? He said, no, I do the internet news thing all day long, so by the time I get home, it's too slow. So we've sort of become accustomed now to this instant click, 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 and getting things. A month ago, Peter Squires, president of Sports Illustrated, said, print is dead, get over it. A lot of good news here about Madison, though. Madison's considered a wired city. Municipal Wi-Fi is on the way, although we're behind. But it's coming, which is good. Verizon picked Madison as one of 26 cities to launch their high-speed cell network called MDO EVDO. That's another good thing. A couple more pieces of data for you. The number of years required to attract 50 million American users. Radio, 38 years. TV, 13. Internet, less than 4. 136 million Americans use the internet every day. 87% of teens, 12 to 17, use it. More than half have high-speed internet access. 40 million get their news online. 30 million get the weather every day. And 27% read blogs. Why are you here today? Okay, I want to mention a couple of items, and I guess I'll ask a question when this first section is done, and that's, I'm going to quote somebody here, and I'll ask you when this quote was written. So many of you have little doubt that people's use of new technologies can be socially and economically transformative. Scholars have found that new tools of communication and information dissemination do these things. The role of experts and information gatekeepers is radically altered as amateurs and dissidents find new ways to raise their voices and challenge authority. Attempts by those in power to censor activity and choke off new avenues of commerce inevitably bring a wider libertarian backlash, and eventually new social and political institutions form. There's a struggle to revive social and legal norms and the battle center on the concept of intellectual property. New forms of language arise, new ways to pursue scientific study, and new scholarly disciplines emerge as knowledge spreads much more quickly than in the past. Boundaries break down between the private and public spheres of life. Literacy grows, and new emphasis is placed on training and educating children. New professions emerge. Read more with the link available. Read the sentence. I'll ask you now, when was this written? Anybody know this? Today? 100 years ago, 500 years ago? It was written by, give you the name, it was written by Elizabeth Eisenstein in her study of the impact of the printing press in the 15th and 16th century Europe. Same sort of things happening today, right? I like to think about this thing called ODA. It's Observe, Orient, Decide, Act. It was a fighter pilot in the 60s and 70s who railed against Pentagon spending on machines and not people. Sounds sort of familiar. And his concept was, if you could increase the cycle time or the performance of observing, orient, decide, and act, you'd have an edge or an advantage over, you know, the person you're flying against or the competitor. And that is certainly true. And if we look at how the news cycle today, where it used to be, you know, write something now in the paper tomorrow or next week or whenever it was, if you think of something, right or wrong, man, it's online now, and they're finding it within minutes. Or news where people are running around. So it's all changed. And I think that's good and bad, but in the end, it'll be good. It's good for democracy. I think of it as demand-side democracy. The people have a much more powerful voice. Some terms and places for you to think about, and again, you can check these out on your own. Blog is simply like this, an online journal. And I think as school board members and administrators, you should chat with the district. That's something you should do once a week, communicate with the public. Something called RSS, really simple syndication. It's a way to read a lot of stuff quickly, and I just want to show this to you on my screen. So I have my New York Times RSS subscription.
Or BBC in this case. So
what is RSS?
Really simple syndication. It was developed by Netscape in the late 90s. And a guy named Dave Weiner, who was in UW grad many years ago. And essentially it allows you to subscribe to sites. So the Washington Post has an RSS feed. Madison, I think Channel 3000 has one. A lot of blogs have them, obviously. New York Times has a BBC, all kinds of things. It allows you just to subscribe and get the headlines or get an executive summary of an article. So you can click and you get it, and then you can look at it and read it. The Wall Street Journal has one, but you have to pay, so you get the summary free, and then you click and you get it, you subscribe or get it. The new thing with this is something called podcasting, where people are embedding either MP3 audio files or video clips in these feeds. So in essence, if you can think about the school board using this, you might have a podcast for each meeting. MP3 bubbles up every time there's a meeting. That would be slick. But this is a way for people to keep up with information very fast, as opposed to clicking across, you know, 300 sites. I can just look here and see what's new. That's very fast. And again, I've got links up here where you can check some of these things out. Happy to talk further if you like. Another thing to follow, I think, is something called Wikipedia. And this follows sort of the demand-side democracy or power to the people. It's just an online encyclopedia maintained by the public. very slow. And lastly, something that Ed mentioned earlier, this concept of authority. So when you search, use Google, MSN, whomever, they're using something called PageRank. So if I search Madison Schools, Madison Referendum, Madison Private Schools, Madison ESL, Madison Special Ed, whatever it is, I'm going to get a list of sites. And the list that comes up for most of these search engines is based on the quality of links going to that site. That's called PageRank. So they're starting to come up with this authority thing. So let's say this school info site. Well, if there's a lot of links coming to that site, Google, MSN, Yahoo, give it a higher page rank. So that means it's going to come up on the search engines faster at a higher rate or a higher value. And that's why it's so important for everybody to participate in the online conversation. Because if you don't, you are outside that whole process where people are looking for information. And finally, I want to mention sort of a classic theory. Well, actually, I think it's in practice, but it's a concept called the cathedral and the bazaar. It was written by an open source software developer. It's also been sort of enhanced over the years by one of the Grateful Dead lyricists, John Carroll. And the whole idea is you have organizations that are based on a cathedral, right? Top down. Or the bazaar. And in the software world, the bazaar would be Linux, open source software. Or in the information world, blogs, free media. And the concept is that this massive amount of knowledge and information will, over time, be far more productive than the cathedral approach. And certainly in technology, we have seen that play out over and over. And lastly, just some links to these newsreaders. That's all I have. So I'll email the links around. You can check it out. But I would encourage every one of you to write online once a week.
Tell me, I'm just going to bring up the questions
sure.
right here, and maybe board members might have questions, and I encourage you to ask if you have them. I mean, how did this all come about? Just
why did I start that?
Yeah, why, and also, you do have two children in the Madison.
I do have two children in Madison. So, yeah. I started this because at a candidate forum at Cherokee 15, 16 months ago, when Shaw was running, John was running, and Ruth. I was there. There was somebody, I think, from the Cap Times, and somebody from, I don't know if it was 27 or 15 was there, 5 minutes. And when I went home that night, I looked at the news on 15, and they basically said there was a school board candidate for him tonight, and that was it. Cut to 5 seconds of video, and they're gone. And I thought, in the internet era, given 25,000 kids in the schools, given $300 million annual investment in our schools, thousands and thousands of employees, that was just absurd. So I thought it was time to put a stake in the ground and say, hey, let's build an online initiative to talk about local K-12 issues from all perspectives. And that's the one.
Okay.
Anything else?
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Zalmar at all? How would somebody, if they... Well, you said you're going to send some stuff. Obviously, you have all of our email addresses. If somebody wanted to contact you directly, said they wanted
sure.
to put together a blog right. or sure. something like that. And one of the things that the superintendent and I have had some conversations about getting the district's message
sure.
to the masses.
Sure.
And while I'm not going to make a motion to force the district to have to do these things.
Right.
I do believe that communication is important, and I do believe that the events of May 24th have made it so that the district, and as a board member, I'll speak for myself as a board member, have to look at other avenues to communicate with the general public. And I would almost say the same thing in terms of the district, in terms of communicating to different people. And so, one of the things that I don't know if it, have you seen the site, Joshua? Have you seen the school? Okay. I believe Carol has, and have you won the dollars? One of the things that, there's information on there that people give their perspective.
Absolutely right.
And that's their truth. They're speaking their truth.
Exactly.
But I felt like, okay, Well, that's their truth, and that's feeding people. But as a board member, I have a truth as well. I really feel that people need to know there's another side to this thing, such as the Leopold situation, people thinking that it just came out. You know, it was a one-year thing, and now we want to build a school. And it's like, this has been going on for 5 years. This community has done everything that it's supposed to do to get to this point, and unfortunately, it just didn't happen. And so I believe that message got lost in don't raise my taxes. Instead of looking at, you know, this is a community issue that needs to be addressed. And again, I believe that we need to utilize, that system to articulate my message. And if the district would like to do that, that's something that they have to decide. Yeah. That, you know,
it's open to any point of view, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention, David Weinberger, who ran Dean's Internet campaign this last year, spoke in Copenhagen the other day and read his remarks. One of the things he said, and I think he's absolutely right, is that conversation becomes knowledge. So if you don't have a conversation, you're just not playing, you know. It's just the wrong decision. Even though you may have conflict, absolutely. But conversation and conflict become knowledge. So it's very important, I think, that every board member, you know, be part of whatever the whatever site they want to be on, but be part of the internet conversation, because people are searching. It's amazing. Before the referenda I watched, there were a lot of inbound searches to the election pages that I put up. Now granted, only 18% of the people vote. But the ones who vote, they want to be informed. So it's important to be part of that conversation. If I can help, absolutely.
Last question. How many hits are you getting?
Well, the site serves anywhere from 40,000 to 95,000 pages a month. Some of that's blog spam. But, you know, so take away a third of it for that. For a very narrow topic, K-12 topic, it's very active, I guess. And it's going to continue to grow.
Just go on to the question.
Mr. Zilmer, you said something at the beginning, towards the beginning of your remarks about what you'd like to see the school board do with our meetings. Would you just say a little bit more?
Oh, sure.
Was that an internet comment? I mean, explain a little bit more what we would be like if we were on internet. Carol has talked about televising it.
Yeah, you'll get much more.
I agree with
that. I would suggest the Garrison Keillor approach. Every Garrison Keillor Parental Companion show is available as an audio stream, audio file, and video. Video over radio show is not really exciting, but I think if you, every meeting that the board has,
we're probably on that scale.
Actually, it's probably more exciting.
Well, my children are the same.
We're probably better at the radio.
Your parents went to the show.
My parents didn't go to the show.
That's right.
There's no father's show.
That's right.
The radio shows are more exciting than ours.
Let's think about the people who vote. They want to be informed, right? So I think every meeting you have, you know, you should have somebody video every meeting, and you should generate a video file in half-hour increments with just a couple sentences on what went on that half hour, and an MP3 file also in half-hour increments and in the full meeting. So all those millions of people with their iPods, when they're running or biking or at the gym, whatever, can listen to the board meeting if they want. This is not difficult. I do it on an $800 computer, and I think it would be a very good investment for the district to do that. As downloadable video files and audio files, all stream, just let people download it. And then blog, once a week.
In addition to Mr. Zeller, I have invited our communications team of experts over there, Mr. Syke, Mr. Quick, and Ms. Stanford, to just in terms of being involved in the conversation in terms of, you know, because I know they have ideas too. And as a matter of fact, Carol made the suggestion about videotaping meetings. I mean, one of the things that we really missed out on, I think people would have really been attuned to our budget process and what happened on that particular night, that I think it would have really, some people really would have been like, wow, there's some tough choices to make here, you know. Unfortunately, they have to kind of hear about it on the back end after that choice, and then they're like, you know, why did they make that choice?
Yeah, I'd almost suggest killing the cable TV thing, frankly, and just putting it up online. Because I think the cable TV,
you don't mean cut cable TV, you just TV.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I would publish about
kill,
that.
Meaning
dead. Because I think there's so many people who can watch it online just looking at our numbers. And it's far more convenient. I mean, I can do it whenever.
Don't you think we're missing a certain segment of the population, though, if we ignore?
Well, that could be. The only thing I wonder about, though, is given the increase in cost of cable. And maybe people are just paying that. It could be, and maybe
especially generational ones.
Well, it's interesting. I was at Farmer's Market the other morning, I'll segue to that. And there was I was standing with my flowers I bought, and there was, all of a sudden I heard this digital camera go, and I looked, and there was a woman about 80 years old, about that tall, with a really fancy pro digital camera on the floor. And so, seniors are actually, according to the New York Times, the fastest growing group of internet users ever.
Well,
because it's
everyone else is.
So. That's right. But again, given a choice.
Other kids are only emailing.
I can say the same anecdotal story that my grandma won't touch anything. We've offered to buy her one, and we've given her one, and she won't touch it.
There's no question. Some people just won't. So.
But then some of us don't have cable at all.
Yeah.
Like me.
Hold on a second. If we're really trying to reach the whole public, and that's really what we're trying to do. Because while this last time I think it was 29% elected, there's a lot of other things that go on besides a referendum that we need to communicate with.
Absolutely.
In the multiple range of communication, internet, cable TV, newspaper, letters to the editor, the whole range of things, rather than saying, okay, we're going to confine ourselves to this, because we're really trying to reach everybody.
That's true, although given choices and given where the growth is, I would certainly go internet first in every respect, and maybe cable TV second. The print thing is very hard anymore because people are so used to getting it now.
And we're going to do the print thing anyway because they're going to come here. So.
I understand, it's hard. It's hard in terms of just the cycle is so different.
Which price has a question?
Go ahead. You mentioned to me once that there was a mayor or someone who was doing a website or doing a blog.
Jerry Brown has a blog.
Okay.
Grant talks about school blog, by the way.
Is it just what he thinks, or do people respond to him and that all?
No, he you can comment on it.
And is the comment then published on the website?
Immediately. Yeah, he puts his agendas out there. Yeah, I think it's right. And again, I think it sort of follows Weinberger's comment about conversation becoming knowledge, right? I mean, there's conflicts. You see people, when you start writing about school board, the schools, some teachers got on there and said, what do you mean? They were hammering. But nevertheless, it was some give and take, and so people could be informed about those different perspectives, which is what we want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that right?
I agree that there's a lot of advantage and a lot of opportunity for dialogue and debate. Where I run into the problem is there's currently no way to check accuracy. And that bothers me a lot because there's a certain standard that we live by in the public sector. When we post something on our website, we put something out on our cable station, we're committed to that being active.
You have accountability.
We have accountability. There is no accountability in lives or in those dialogues. And that bothers me about the whole internet world and the whole conversations that take out happening up there. And I don't know some way that's going to have to correct itself, but right now it's a problem in our society, I believe.
Well, I think you raise a good point. The general confidence in media is at all-time lows, as you know, whether it's TV or print or anything. And the difference with blogs and the internet, though, is it's self-correcting much faster than the traditional media. And I think a great place to go for that sort of discussion is Jay Rose's NYU journalism prof. And he talks about all these things all the time. But at least with the blogs, if somebody's writing about Iraq or the schools or whatever, and if you're part of the conversation, and if I say something you disagree with, or Ed, or Johnny, or whomever, you have an opportunity to put your point of view. And if you do that, people who are truly interested will find it. They'll comment or whatever. I mean, you're right. There is not going to be any great arbiter of truth. So similarly, when newspapers first hit, there were people pamphleting all over the place.
and the chastisement print something inaccurate, you can go to them and they'll retract it. If you can show them
sometimes, not always. Not always. They're inaccurate on a data mining thing. I mean,
I would in letters this big.
Yeah. No, actually, no. This one they did.
Jim, who did you say that professor was that does research on that?
Gia Rosen. I'll put that link up there, too. Okay.
You had a question?
Yeah, so if the district was to do a lot of this, would the district then decide the topic they put out there, their statement, which Roger would check for accuracy, and then there's comments on that? So you can kind of say, these are the topics we want to talk about, and then there's comments that flow from that?
As an example, Art mentioned to me last winter that the district had done a good job over the years of generating more grant money. That, to me, is a great topic of discussion. So I posted it up here, actually, this morning. You sent me a link. I put it up, and something like that, I would imagine, either a part of your homepage or on the discussion site, whatever you call it, you'd say, hey, here's some data on our grant results or on our scores or whatever it is. And you start just putting links up, and maybe you link outside to a few different places and start the conversation.
But then there's comments to that particular
topic.
So you start the topic with the information you want, and then people say, well, I don't believe this.
They don't believe it, or they write on their own blog. They write
why don't you put one of these up?
Yeah, they write on their own. So if I was, well, let's pull up that grant one. Yeah, let's.
So we could have read Mr. Winkler's stuff before he came to talk.
I don't know what he said. Yeah. So here's what I did this morning. I just put this, district has a useful summary of current and completed grants, and I have a link to it, right? So that's all I did. There it is. Now, if I had more time, I might have had a bit of a summary here, saying, well, this is what's going on, here's the amount of money. So maybe three paragraphs, just something that they can quickly scan. A lot of things you want to make sure you do, there's a certain art to writing on the internet. And that's using, there we go. If you use indents and little paragraphs, people can scan things because people reading on computers always scan information. So you want to give them, bullet points and a couple of things and then links, just quick links, boom, boom, boom. So maybe, you would talk about cultures or whatever the subject is, put some points on here and post them. And then, here's an example on the left side. Yeah, here I have a place where I put up the most recent comments. So on the homepage, every time somebody comments, it updates this part of the page automatically. Just software does that. So people can go and see what the conversations are. And put the stuff out there.
Put my AdX more Westside students.
Yeah.
I mean, tonight we just approved the. What was it that we did?
we added
land into the school district. That was an agreement. And what I did is I asked Roger, so well, Roger, why are we doing this or whatever? Roger gave me the information. I typed it up and put it out there. Because somebody asked why. Why are we doing this if we're always cutting money and things like that? Well, this is the growth of the city. This is what we've been talking about in terms of long-range planning, talking about 6,000 more students in the next 20 years and maybe building a new high school out in this community. And this is the reason why that's right. Going to happen.
So and the beauty of this is, like from now on, you call me at my home on vacation day and I do it from the screen porch.
That's right, with your wireless network.
And then you posted it. Yeah.
Got it.
So what's slick about this, though, from anybody moving to Madison or moving into those houses when they're built, if they search, they're going to find this. They're going to find this discussion, Ed, Johnny, and whoever else posted it, they're going to see this discussion. They're going to say, okay, here's how it happened, here's what's going on. Boom, there it is, facts.
I also I put a lot of information that Joe Quick sends to the board, right. The legislative information. I think that's real important to find, what's happening in Madison is not just happening here in Madison, it's happening across the state. And, when Joe sends those links, I'm like, wow, this. Because I don't get the Milwaukee paper or the Racing paper or anything like that. To put that up online is great. And one thing I told Joe, I said, well, okay, just let me cut out the middleman. I don't want to do this. You do it.
And it's all set up.
So, so again, these are the kinds of things that, I think, again, getting information out to the
to the public, I think, you know, it's good.
Marcia, do you have a question?
More comments, you know me. We've talked to Jim about different tools that he uses that we could use at a low cost, because for me the real question is, what baskets do we put our eggs in? Our cable channels essentially cost us absolutely nothing to have two cable channels 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The internet costs us nothing. It's all of the infrastructure required to get the message to use those modes. On Friday, I turned 45 years old, and I've been around now long enough that this is deja vu from the 70s when people were saying this exact same conversation about cable access television. And where, to me, the real question is the broader picture, not which tools we're using, but what are we saying and to whom are we saying it? If we are in agreement that we are trying to reach the greatest number of Madisonians as possible, then where's the critical mass? Which are the tools that reach the most number of people? And we should be using as many of those tools as possible. RSS is one of the things that we're looking into. It's a lot of my colleagues around the country who are in community media are using those kinds of tools. They're also using low-power radio, low-power television, all those different tools. And I think we should explore those. But the real question is, who are we trying to reach? In my opinion, right now, in this point in history, while Jim's right, it's not going to be this way for long, this is not the greatest number of people. And what are the demographics of the people using internet? And particularly, you know, you have a slice of the population using internet, and then an even smaller slice who are relying on it primarily for their news or going to blogs. So, and what are the demographics of those people? In some cases, will we be talking to the choir, or will we be reaching new audiences? I mean, what is it we want to say, and to whom do we want to say it? That's really what we should be talking about. And how often do we want to say it? How often can we change it? How often is it necessary to change it? I think all those things are important. And the other thing is, we've got, essentially in this point in history, we've got text, audio, and video, and any combination of those three. Who uses which? You know, and
I remember when I asked you to take the state funding system, the question was if you want just a video and put the video up on the screen.
But we're working, Jim's got to give us some leads.
There's a lot of information.
Yeah. That one we were using was a totally free one. Yeah. Well, there were other issues.
What kinds of costs do we really have to compare? I understand what you're saying, but also, there's some cost involved and some, I think, extreme loads that are communicated to school board members via an interview that you control and we do periodically.
But, I mean, there's no reason why if the school board made a decision to use our cable channel for
We invest a fair amount of time and energy in that, and then it runs endlessly whether the topic is still good or not until we do another one. And, you know, I'm not very aware of, I'm just trying to use that as an example, I'm not aware of the whole range of things. But if, I think Johnny's raised a really interesting question. It'd be nice to see, it'd be interesting to me to see the various, sort of what you said. I mean, who are we trying to communicate? What are we trying to communicate? How many ways can we do it right now? But also, which of these costs and what kind of way? I mean, Ken's communicating a lot with the paper folks that you're saying nobody reads, and, you know, we pay for that. I mean, how can we get, what would it take for us to get a good overview of sort of the comparative costs, audiences, effectiveness, so we can make a good and informed decision?
One thing I would add to that is, depends on who your target is, to Marcia's point. Are you targeting voters? Right? You know, are you trying to communicate with voters, parents, teachers? You know, where is it? I vote, if it's voters, it's absolutely here. You've got to decide, you know, who you're talking to.
It's probably some of everybody, to be honest. I mean, because I mean,
because everybody doesn't communicate the same way. And I got some other stuff I want to talk about, but I don't know if we're ever going to get to it. But hold on. I wanted to say something.
Oh, sure.
You said, okay, Mary G wanted to talk about it.
I guess I was following up on what Marsha was saying about it, and now it has been said by Mr. Zellmer, is that it's the who you're trying to communicate with, what the demographics of that group are, but what the purpose is. And is it to influence a referendum? Is it to communicate with parents about a calendar change? Is it to talk with students about what they think about pet policy? Or what, you know, what is the purpose behind the group to whom you are doing the communication? And again, thinking about the multiple forms of communication, I think the point of whether everyone accesses cable TV or whether we buy the newspapers or whether we listen to NPR, or, you know, what is it that, you know, if we did a demographic survey of this community, who listens to, watches, interacts with at different points in the day for what purpose? And it really would be distressful to me to think that we would make a single decision for multiple purposes. And I think that would have to be dealt with very carefully. And who, what, where, when, why would have to be addressed as you consider that. I mean, if I just think about myself, there are different times of the day I do different things and for different purposes.
Okay. Just because you're leaving. Because I'm going to bump you up in line.
One of the things I would like to say is that I think we have a number of publications that I'd like to see us maybe use more when you talk about blogging, getting information out to people. For example, we have a demographic population of people that read Pomoja, the New Times, and there's a new magazine out for Southeast Asians. If you want to get information out to people, put information in there also. Because I think when you talk about who you want to communicate with, that's a huge segment of our community. And I'm not saying that you're not involving them, but I must say to you that I didn't feel, as you're speaking, to be honest and talk about a blog, I was talking about an honest conversation with you, I didn't feel that you had those people in mind at all with what you were just saying.
Yeah, I don't have any demographics on who or what or where.
Well,
I guess
those are voting public
people. No question.
When you say they're voters, and they only, you know, if you want to get to a voter, do that. I will say to you that if you want to get to a voter, you should read the magazines that these voters have for a number of years, anyway, that I know of, read, and they read them, believe me, because they know something about them. So I think those would be great things to do to get information out already that we have available.
I know the Madison Times publishes some of their stuff on their website, and I've linked to it a number of times. You're right, there's the print version and there's the web version as well.
Well, thank you for coming in. And so this is volunteer
family. Oh,
thanks for coming. And I think for me the question is whether or not you will allow our paid staff to actively become participant in blogs. And because for me, I think that our channels of communication have already been established with the school website, the cable access channels, a simple letter or flyer to either this backpack to the parents at home, or a letter to the editors. With ongoing communication with the people who, I don't know if they, you know, people use their real names, so they could use
as far as real names.
Emery's here, and so I know that he's serious. I think the question for the board and for the for Art is whether or not you want to allow staff time for designating somebody, Kid Joe or Kim, somebody else on the staff to actively go into these sites and post information or have ongoing conversations with people who post the issues or issues about the district. And I personally, we're talking about non-traditional communication strategies. Maybe it's time to do that. But then, as Roger said, you run into the risk of carrying on conversations with people without carrying on conversation that may be ongoing. And at some point, then, I think, you know, between one or two responses, at some point, we would have to say, come down to the office and let's talk about it. Because you do run the risk of, you know, you're responding to somebody, somebody else responded, and so I think the question for us is whether or not we want to actively become participants in the sites or blogs. Because, you know, I look at the Madison School website, and I often go in to check when meetings are, what other information's out there. There's a lot of information there related to school budget and grants from individual school sites, literally down to, I think if you want to go in and check for who teaches which grade at which school, all the information's out there already. And I assume that you have, you know, links to MSD website.
I think you raise a good point, though. I think information is one thing, knowledge is another. So if you think about referenda or ESL programs or whatever it is, if at least there was something like a blog or what have you, where topics that were either coming up in a board meeting or what have you, you could link all over the place and people link into it, that would be beneficial. But I understand your point of view on time. These are not easy questions.
Carol has a question, and then Ruth, and then Lori.
I mean, it seems to me that where we're tending is kind of to talk in terms of putting together a communication plan that looks at a variety of different sources. But one of the things I wanted, my quick kind of recollection of where you started out, Jim, was that for people 50 and above, at least 50% of them get their news still from the newspaper.
The daily newspaper.
And that's a national statistic.
Yeah, and that's also, but they're also the fastest growing.
Right, but and those are the going back to the issue of voters. That's the highest percentage of people who vote. So that relates a lot to what Mary and Marshall were saying in terms of determining who our audience is and what we're communicating. It's mostly to say that a communication strategy probably is going to have to look at a number of different ways of communications because we are going to want to communicate to different populations. And I think in this community, my bet is that more than 50% read newspapers. Now, whether they read the local newspapers or the New York Times, I don't know about that. But we can't discount newspapers also. I think that continues to be an important part.
Mine's question is, I guess my overall question is, what is the focus? What are you trying to do? What kind of decisions are you eventually going to use the board to make? My main interest is knowing whether the thing of costs and so forth, internet could bring us closer to being able to give real-time access or very close to real-time access to how decisions are made, all the committee meetings, all the stuff that comes before us, not wait till it's on the blog a few days later or catch the part of it they have to get on TV or radio. And, I personally have seen this less as necessarily a presentation that tells us how we want to put out all the info about MMSD or, you know, whatever. Just, I think the something Carolyn said I agree with, you get a partial understanding, to say the least, my view, of what we're doing. If what you get is, if you happen to be somebody who has cable TV, which I don't, and what you see is that monthly meeting, long after the committees, with only those trunk appearances that are there that night, without, you know, back and forth. And I think it would be, in terms of some of Mr. Bloom's suggestions, openness, I think, is very important. And how, you know, we may disagree about what it meant or what happened or who did what, but if people could make better decisions for themselves, if they had access to something other than our monthly, you know, rubber stamping lots of bills and our conversations with school board members every 6 months or whatever it is, and, you know, I would really be interested in supporting something that gives people access to the full range of what goes into decisions.
Yeah. And tonight's meeting was more to kind of get this dialogue going. I mean, I've spoken with one time or another with, well, everybody that's affiliated with MMSD and communications folks and stuff like that. And again, tonight's meeting was to really start looking at how does, in essence, the board, how does the board, and that's a different thing than the district. But as a board, how do we as seven individuals communicate to the general public? And again, I don't think people know. So and Carolyn's had some suggestions about televising these meetings. I'm hearing, you know, obviously blog, but I even, you know, talked a step further, talking about we have an email newsletter that goes out to the community. There's nothing in there about the board, nothing. The hard-hitting interviews that Ms. Staniford does with individual board members, it's great, but I have no idea, other than that, what else did the board talk about? I mean, there's still people think we meet once a month on that day in the auditorium, and I mean, I don't know if you remember, there was a email that came across and said, you know, I saw that on TV and I was just sick to my stomach because you guys just up there rubber stamping. I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, that is kind of the culmination of you know, all the things we've done in this room, and we take it down there. So it does, to the general public, look like, oh, we're just moving stuff along, just stamping it and moving along. But if people were to understand what was going on in here and all the decisions that were made and all the discussions that were taking place, I think people would have a different view of the board. At the same time, the district, I think, has, they have an interest of getting the story of the district out to the general public. There are African-American students that are achieving. There are Latino students that are achieving. There are Southeast Asian students that are achieving at a high level in this district. But again, you won't know that if you're just listening across the fence talking about, well, my baby got dogged out in gym class. You know, what should we do? Let's go on over to the principal, and then we're going to go to the school board, and we're going to pound our fists and that kind of thing. No, there's a lot of good things happening in our schools. And unfortunately, that message doesn't get out as much as I believe it should. And I do believe using these non-traditional ways and traditional ways and any other ways that we can think about to get a message across to the general public, I think is real good.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Lori has something.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about a lot of different things for a lot of different purposes. One thing that would help me, and I'd like to see the district put together, would be something maybe like a communications matrix on what the different types of communication vehicles are. Talking about what Marcia was talking about, the costs of the different methods, the audience of the different methods, the type of communications, and then the advantages and the disadvantages. And there's probably a whole host of other things we should be looking at. But a disadvantage of a lot of the different things that the district currently does
is that it doesn't allow for two-way communication. That, and when you talk about getting out the district's message, getting out what the district thinks, getting out what all the good things that happen in the district, I think that's frustrating to the public because there's no way to, other than the emails we get, there's kind of no way to feel that you're getting information back. So I think when we put together this matrix, if we would do that, you know, one of the advantages would be if a thing like a blog would allow two-way communication. That would be identified as an advantage of that. And that would give us then a chance to look at all what the different options are and then maybe further down the road develop a strategy or a plan. But until we get all the information kind of in a nice cohesive package, it's difficult to do a lot.
Would you be looking at, because again, I see two messages here. There's one for the board, and then there's one for the district, not just the board.
But I think the vehicles are the same.
I mean, it's not two different things. I mean, we're your staff. I'm not the mayor and you're the legislature. I mean, it's not the governor and the legislature. We're just, you are the district.
Right.
The board is the district. Now, you may, each one of you may have different individual messages, obviously, that need to go out as individual board members and all that kind of thing. But when you make a decision, you are the district. We're just the staff to you.
And that was my point. Yeah. I mean, again, I wasn't trying
but people see us. People see us just the way it was just talked about. People see us as, here's the district, and here's the board. And it's like this. We have no existence outside of you.
But I don't know if I agree with that, Tommy, because I see the staff as just putting out basic, just tax information. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would allow Ken, for example, to have an ongoing conversation on a blog with somebody. I would feel more comfortable if, you know, maybe after one or two communications to break them down. If they have an issue, you resolve that issue. I truly think that we as a district has already established a lot of the channels for people to bring their complaints to us, to do by either calling teacher or principal or your office. Or they post, well, right now we don't have, I don't know if there's any space where on our website people have complaints or they have issues that they can post on the MSP website. If not, then maybe this is.
They can send them in, but they can't post them.
But we do have emails, and we get a lot of that. Yeah. I think right now, the question is whether or not you want to jump into.
No, that's not my question. I'm just the hosting the conversation at this moment.
There's no question. Maybe what's here is this conversation. I think it's going into the direction of whether or not we as a board or as a district want to. And I'm not very familiar with chat and vocabularies. We want to open our own blog, site, or something like that. And I think if it's a way for us to reach more people in the public, then that's fine. But at the same time, I do want to have some control over what can be posted on there, who can respond. And we're going to have personnel to respond. So,
yeah, but this cover wants to. This is my point entirely. You have two board members. I vote yes for something. Mr. Fang votes yes for something. But we have two different reasons on why we voted yes. And sometimes, and obviously, they're different reasons. Let's say I want to communicate that. I agree with the superintendent because of X, Y, and Z. I'm not rubber stamping his proposal because I have the data and it shows and it backs it up. You know, but let's say you say that and you have a different reason.
you know. But I guess I just wanted to more or less focus, again, there's two separate things, as a board member and then as a district. Because I do think that, although, and you're right, Art, in terms of kind of the mayor, and you're right, as a staff, the staff works for the board, but the messages might be a little different. But Ms. Kubza, and I have this kind of written down, if you want to use that as a motion, I would second that in terms of that communications matrix.
Well, we'll just do it.
Yeah. But let's make a motion. And let's, and what that would mean is the district, they would come back with a plan of kind of some things that they'd like to do. And again, that might include using the SIS site. It might include some other things that they have been talking about forever and a day and ready to take us into to the next century or whatever. So, I mean, again, I mean, one thing that we didn't talk about is how these communications work for hiring as well, and how that's important, particularly trying to reach people of color. And there's a lot of different listservs and things like that. And again, as a school district, I never see our stuff on there. And again, if the district needs a bilingual resource specialist, is that the term, or teacher? I'm confused with the term.
Okay.
If we're looking for someone, shouldn't we go to the people who we're trying to target? Would you mean the Latino people? Maybe. But I mean, again, and I see, you know, I see the city, the county, and other municipalities utilizing these places to, in essence, recruit. And I believe as a school district, we should be doing the same thing. Carol?
Go back to Lori's comments in terms of, I mean, I think the proposal is a good one, but that it gives us something to respond to and move it along. But also, Lori asked about most of it is one-way communication and this issue of dialogue, which is one that I've been thinking about myself. And I just wanted to kind of with you. One of the things I want us to talk about this summer as we look at kind of what the board is doing and how we're going about doing our business is some form of what I did several years ago, which was kind of an open session once a month where people were invited to just come down and talk with us as a way to get away from the formal 3 minutes, but a chance to have some interaction. There were two problems with that. One, the number of board members willing to participate declined over time, and the number, unless there was a critical issue, often the public was not involved. But I think it's something that I would like to see us talk about and maybe think of ways that could make it more effective. But I agree with you. I think we need to find ways to do that.
So I would make a motion that we direct staff to develop a communications matrix, which includes relevant information about the types of communication vehicles, sources, resources, it takes. So we do that, the audience, types of information, the advantages and disadvantages, and whatever else we think is appropriate to provide us, and that they come back to us with that communication matrix.
I'll say that. Questions? I mean, it's not like there's something great at RDRG. No, mine isn't. Bill Keys is. He's not here. Okay. Any questions about that? I mean, and this is a committee work here.
I just want to say that I remember a while ago you were talking about folks that we don't come in. We don't conduct board businesses inside of board meetings.